This is CICK News. Today on CICK News, as communities across northern British Columbia continue to grapple with the long-term impacts of industrial development on land and water, the story of the Nechaco River has become a powerful focal point for questions of stewardship, sovereignty, and justice. The documentary Nechaco, It Will Be a Big River Again, brings these issues into sharp focus, tracing the decades-long efforts of the Siksika First Nations and the Tsleil-Waututh First Nation to restore a river system profoundly altered by the construction of the Kenny Dam and the diversion of its waters for industrial use. At the heart of the film is not only an environmental story, but a legal and political one, anchored in the landmark Siksika First Nation and Tsleil-Waututh First Nation versus Rio Tinto Alcan Incorporated, a case heard by the Supreme Court of British Columbia. The decision marked a significant moment in Canadian law, recognizing that First Nations could advance claims for damages related to the destruction of fisheries, which is a critical step in asserting Indigenous rights and title in the context of resource extraction. In this interview, we hear from Liana Patrick, the film's writer and director, as well as Jasmine Thomas, associate producer and stewardship and reconciliation lead for Siksika First Nation. The documentary Nechaco, It Will Be a Big River Again, is playing at the Old Church in Smithers on April 19th at 7 p.m. It is hosted by What Matters in Our Valley.
Hi, I'm Jasmine Thomas. I am a member of Siksika's First Nation Nufkaiwaten Frog Clan, and I am currently acting as the Stewardship and Reconciliation Lead for the Nation and participated as the Associate Producer on the Nechaco film.
Hi, I'm Liana Patrick, and I'm a member of the Tsleil-Waututh First Nation, Frog Clan as well, and I'm also Acadian and Scottish, and I am a professor in the Faculty of Health Sciences at Simon Fraser University as well, and I'm the writer and director of Nechaco.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. How did the landscape and communities of the Nechaco region, how did they shape the storytelling approach, but also visual language of this documentary for you?
I grew up mostly in Jasmine's territory, actually in Siksika's territory, and we lived, you know, meters away from the Nechaco River. And as I was invited to be a part of this film, you know, it was an area that obviously is near and dear to my heart, having my family there, having grown up around near the Nechaco. But I realized there was so much that I didn't know about the territory, that I didn't know about the river. There was a lot I did and a lot I didn't know. So, you know, as I was meeting people and getting to know, you know, understand what the story was going to be about, I think all of us realized, like, you know, the central role, like the center of the heart of the story is the river, you know, and efforts of community of Jasmine and many others over the many years to save the river and restore it and protect it. So, you know, the river, the landscape, the impacts, all of that, the impacts of resource extraction, of colonial policies and what continues to happen, those, you know, that was a big part of the story.
So thinking of the Nechaco, definitely think of, you know, the major connections to, you know, being one of the largest tributaries to the Fraser River and growing up in between Tsleil-Waututh Tene territory and Siksika's in the Van Der Hoof and Prince George region. You really get to build that relationship with not only the rivers themselves, but within the entire Nechaco watershed, which comprises about one-fifth of the province of BC in terms of, you know, land base and scale. So when we're looking at a project such as the Kenny Dam and the reservoir associated with that development. It really impacted an entire region, about one-fifth of the province. And then beyond that, the interconnected river systems of, this province and the food sources that not only our region depends upon, but where they go up to spawn to, the headwater areas of, Takla Lake First Nation and others, and down to, the Pacific. So I think, making those connections in terms of impact, but also in terms of sustenance and the different connected systems, really played a role in terms of positioning where I see myself as a Yinka Dene woman, as a Saika's woman within the broader Nchaka watershed, but within these interconnected systems.
So how did you navigate and sort of find that balance between telling a very legal story, but also a deeply personal story to the nation members involved?
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, it was a daunting challenge at first, to think about how to tell this story, because it's many, many stories, and it's a very long history. But we were Lantern Films, and the one of the producers, Jessica Hallenbeck, was approached by Saikas, by the nation, to make this film. And it was happening at a time when the court case was happening, and I think that arguments were getting they were preparing arguments for the Supreme Court, the BC Supreme Court. And so the time was right to really tell that story, and this court case was really significant, and really precedent setting in a number of ways. And the communities, Stellaten and Saikas, they came together and agreed that this was something they wanted to tell. So we kind of started looking at the court case as like the backbone, a way of like connecting all these different pieces. And then, through lots of meetings in community, through being able to get access to a lot of the archives and those materials, especially recordings of elders and these interviews that have been done from like the early 80s, we were able to sort of really situate this story along kind of a historical continuum, but also have it really be grounded in really specific voices of folks, that were involved in leadership positions like Chief Archie Patrick and former and Chief Jackie Thomas. And of course, Jasmine is a really key part of this story as well. So, we were really fortunate to have folks in community who had these incredible, this incredible presence on the film, and were able to share the story. So I think, we were able to sort of find that. I don't know if it's a balancing, but between that sort of legal, big legal concepts, but really grounded in that ongoing living experience that our leadership brings to these issues. Like, it's not just that they're.
When this film was being thought of and contemplated, I think it was being thought of for quite some time, for many years, as the leadership at the day. There was multiple different councils and hereditary leaders and community members throughout the years who really championed the battle for the Nachako well beyond our court journey in 2011. But I think at that time we were also engaged in other social justice issues and environmental related matters, and had affiliations prior to this legal court journey. As Liana mentioned, beyond the courtrooms and the boardrooms, our nations were collectively aligning on opposition to other developments being proposed in the region around the time we started our journey in the courts against Rio Tinto Alcan for, our pursuit to save the Nechaco River. So we had that experience as the Yinka Dene Alliance, and I think, coming into shifting focus to another project that impacted our rivers, looking more closely at home with the Nechaco River. we were able to really see this as an opportunity to ensure, narrative sovereignty and our ability to tell this story about our resistance, but also our resiliency as well. We've had, with other opportunities, I guess, that have arisen around our opposition, some may have taken it upon themselves to defy, I guess, that have arisen around our opposition, but also at that same time, we were trying to ensure our ability to pursue projects that were in alignment with our community's values and our stewardship obligations as Yinka Dene people who have, responsibility and relationship with the land and the waters as well. So, taking this moment through this project, through this film journey, to ensure that our story was being told in a way. And I think Lana did an amazing job. And we had such an amazing, predominantly Indigenous crew, film crew, help us, amplify our story that we wanted to tell. And while it is navigating a very, technical precedent-setting case, it also, help advance the film making industry in the process as well. So while we were able to tell our story, we were able to ensure that, other Indigenous communities can ensure that, that sovereignty, that narrative sovereignty piece is considered, but also associated benefits with telling our story.
You touched on again some of these points that I was hoping to address, which I guess I might just kind of very pointedly ask, what effect do you think, or that you know, or that you've heard feedback that you've gotten from members of the Saikuz Nation or Stalatin Nation, if once this documentary was out, what effect or what change did it have for members of those nations?
So, one of the other layers that we were able to include in this film was developing an impact campaign. There's multiple major projects being proposed within the region, but also utilizing it as a tool to engage with not only our members of our respective communities of Stalatin and Saikas, but also within the broader non-Indigenous communities as well, the Vanderhoof community, the Fraser Lake, everywhere else, all the way to Kitimat. So it really did help raise, greater awareness about that, but it also allowed for conversations to occur around food sovereignty, impacts to health and well-being and racism, systemic racism, and having those difficult conversations around settler colonialism. So these types of conversations were able to kind of pull from different themes of the film, which you hear brought out by the different characters that are highlighted. And as Liana mentioned, there's just a few folks that are highlighted in this film, but there's multiple generations of community members and leadership who have been raising these issues for many years. And I think it really does offer the opportunity to have those conversations, not just in the courtrooms and the boardrooms, but in the classrooms and the workspaces and, out on the land where a lot of these industrial activities are happening, at the operational level.
Yeah, we had a screening before the premiere of the film last year in Vanderhoof for community members. And it was the most nervous I've been through the whole process because, this was the audience that I most wanted to be okay with what they were seeing on the screen. And the response was amazing. And there were just two things in particular. One of the community members whose relative they heard through the archival recordings, was so emotional and so moved by being able to hear the voice of their relative. And I just and then I had a family member who was there too, who just spoke to me a number of times, called me actually a couple of days later to talk about how highly he thought of the film and how good it was to see our people on the screen in that way.
Yeah, I think there are, regardless of our geographical situations, we are still connected within these different watershed systems and, the broader climate connections, and I think there's still opportunities for us to collectively, question the systemic racist platforms that are advancing, different processes, different laws and legislation that aren't in alignment with our collective wellness and stewardship obligations that we have, whether we're Indigenous or non-Indigenous. I think there's still the opportunity to ensure that, principles like the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, that those are still being considered in amongst the broader Canadian public and whichever watershed system you might be in, because those implications can affect anyone. When projects aren't done in a good way, led by those people who have been stewarding those resources for millennia. So I think, we can continue to question these systems that continue to do harm, and work with Indigenous peoples to identify and advance solutions that we are creating, because I think many of our communities and First Nations communities, we're not always against developments or trying to impede certain things. We just want to ensure that, there's systems that are in place, that they're being done in a good way, that they're in alignment with our values and our principles, and can meet objectives that benefit all of us.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And that's, very similarly, what I was thinking was one of the main things that I was thinking through the making of this film throughout over the years was how remarkable it is. I think that the nations are doing this work, for the nations and for their membership, but for the good of all of, the communities and the systems and structures, because we've always had this understanding that our waters are connected, our lands are connected, that what happens in one part of our watershed is going to affect other parts. And so the restoration and the stewardship of that is really crucial for the health and well-being of everyone. I just don't think we can tolerate these really policies that are ruining us anymore, and work together to figure out a good way forward. So, yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I'm so looking forward to watching this documentary in a room full of people, whether they're seeing it for the first time or if they've seen it before here in Smithers. And I just thank you so much both for taking the time out of your extremely busy schedules to speak with me.
Thank you so much. This has been a great conversation. I really appreciate it.
On Saturday night at the Smithers Legion, community members gathered to celebrate the Bulkley Valley's watersheds through music and conversation. The event was hosted by What Matters in Our Valley, a grassroots group founded in 2017 to protect local rivers, wildlife, and quality of life in the valley. Local performers, including Teresa Michelle, Bill Crossan, Edward Quinlan, The Chesterfields, and Reckless Mountain, played songs dedicated to the valley, while speakers such as Tom Roper and Len Vanderstar shared updates on the Telkwa Coal project, now owned by Bathurst Resources Limited. The event raised over $1,000 to support research and expert analysis, highlighting strong local engagement around the future of the valley.
Make a switch there. Teresa is right behind me, and she's going to give us some of her personal music. And this girl is very talented. Teresa from Telkwa.
I've lived on the Telkwa River since 2006 on Tsuut'ina traditional territory, and it's really an incredibly important part of my life. So many changes over the 20 years in Telkwa, and every year the river changes too. It's just amazing. So beautiful.
So we're just setting a little bit with the music. I've got a statement I just wanted to pass on to you. When we were talking with the people from Telkwa Coal, It was actually quite interesting. One of the guys came down and was speaking with one of the ladies in Telqua, Averland Coal Mine Road area. And he came, knocked on our door and was trying to get information about what they were doing. And he said to her, please don't worry about your water. He said, if we cause any problem, we'll provide you with bottled water for the rest of your life. And I found that just so profound. I couldn't get over that. And obviously he didn't live in Telqua or Smithers because he wouldn't worry about that.
Hey, thanks for having me here. Yeah, this is an important cause. I don't feel like I need to talk too much on it. We've got some really great speakers talking about what's going on here. Thought about doing some songs about coal and that sort of thing, but never quite got around to it. But I thought I'd do some love songs for you, because that's kind of why we're here, is love for the valley and yeah, this place that we live. Had a request for a song. Don't really do requests unless I wrote them, so that doesn't happen very often. The song's about my cat Punky. It's a love song.
Nancy Cody. Nancy, so what information do you want people to know about Telqua Coal and about tonight as well, and why does this outreach matter?
Well, I think this getting the public out and becoming more involved is exactly what we need. We need this everybody, you know, regardless of how they feel about it, to become more aware of what's going on. It's going to be a huge mine that they propose, and it's 7 kilometers from Telqua, and it's fractured and faulted land, and you can't keep it covered, and the risks are just way too great. It's a really dirty, high sulfur coal that they're going to wash with our clean water and put it right in the Telqua. So it's and it's a very volatile market, and the coal is plentiful. Coal, there's more coal than any other fossil fuel in the world. Why are they want to destroy a beautiful place for something we shouldn't be burning in the first place anymore? You know, the markets have fallen. They've changed hands 8 times. They've gone bankrupt. Those are all things we need to keep in mind. They're not being truthful in talking to the people about the risks and about the closeness, 7 kilometers. And the open pit will be as deep as a 30 to 40 story building upside down in the ground, you know? It's like lots of blasting, lots of fractured and faulted acid-generating rock. It just doesn't make any sense. It's just people that want to make money and destroy this place. So, yeah, that's what I want people to know, is that, you know, I would always talk to you. People think about the jobs, but who's going to take care of it in perpetuity when the company folds in 3 years? Or, I mean, in the beginning, you always try to be thoughtful and not say, come out opposed, because you want to be really thoughtfully study everything. The reports are really long, and we get people to read them, and we review them, and we get experts to look at them, and they give us their opinion. So hopefully at the forum, the community forum, people can ask questions, and but then we want everybody to get involved in writing letters and letting people know how they feel. I want people to think about what they value and get involved. Speak to their neighbors, speak to their friends. And there's only one Wet'suwet'en, that place, right? And there's only one Wet'suwet'en Valley, and that's where we are. And coal is plentiful. There's lots of it. And we're not supposed to burn it. So, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Pam.
My name is Edward Quinlan. I acknowledge that I'm here on unceded Wet'suwet'en Nation territory, Kasyuk House, Gidimden Clan, in a country that is predicated upon the theft of land and the continued ignorance of the extent to which we as settlers have benefited from this system of violence that perpetuates to this day. Persists to this day. My name is Edward. I call myself the begging poet. I just think that it would be nice if we could turn some money into change. It would help us make sense of all of these cents. I've got about three poems, but before I do that, I want to make sure that I make time for the most important stuff, which is standing on the soapbox that I'm currently on. Everybody, hopefully, will know what the word decolonization means by the time today is done. What we need to do is decolonize our practices as settlers and as participants in the economy. We cannot continue to do the same foolish things that we've been doing for literal centuries with regards to extirpating species and destroying our land. Today, I disappeared into the woods and sank into oblivion, becoming one with a nurse tree, offering myself up to the everything of it. A mossy bag of bones reached into my chest cavity and found a space it will call home, while various mushrooms trumpet successes and reach to the heavens from whence they came. And the atoms, oh, the atoms, they reside. The ferns are whispering ancient knowledge to me and speaking truth into being, while the birds caper and sing, twittering trickeries that manifest magic from the ether, one trill at a time. I did not ask for it, but it found me anyway, this release, this contentment, this soil, these rocks, minerals becoming me, me becoming minerals. It's where it all began.
Gail Lunn. Okay. So what's your involvement with What Matters in Our Valley?
I became aware of the group and the issue shortly after we moved here a few years ago. And as residents who have a river level well, this was something that we were concerned about, we were curious about, we wanted to learn about the impacts of the proposed program. And what we've heard to date hasn't really put our minds at ease necessarily. And we are very concerned, not just for ourselves, obviously, but for the environment that sustains the wildlife, the fish. And many people will ask folks in this organization, are you anti-industry? And I think all of us would say, we understand industry is a fact of life. The problem we have is where it's situated. That is the big problem. And we've not been convinced yet that this is a project that's going to go any other way than any other project has before it.
A lot of people hear about this and they don't do anything after, but you did.
I feel like what exists here, and there's an energy in this space that most people would say that they understand and feel. And living here, I feel a responsibility to protect it and really cherish it.
And also, too, Silent Auction is almost done. You've raised over $1,000.
Yes, that's correct. We're thrilled.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, I'm Jay Gilden. I'm part of What Matters in Our Valley, and I've been working on the Telco Coal Project issues since 2017 when it started. We're about to enter what's called the final assessment period for the mine, which is done by the Environmental Assessment Office. And during that period, which is 150 days long, there will be a public comment period, and we want to inform people what the issues are so people know what they're facing if there's an open pit coal mine 7 kilometers from Telqua and 4 kilometers from the Telqua River.
When is that? When's the open forum or the open public?
Well, it'll depend on when the final assessment period begins, which is something of a fluid date.
For people who weren't here tonight, what do they need to know about What Matters in Our Valley?
Well, we've been designated as what's called the Community Advisory Committee by the Environmental Assessment Office, and our responsibility is to try to communicate what the issues are that the community see arising from having this coal mine in the community. We've never had them before, and at least not an open pit one, not on this industrial scale.
Working with the Environmental Assessment Office as the community advisor, how much responsibility do you feel from it?
Well, they gave us what they said was 30 days to respond to the latest information request responses. So they're kind of giving us a very difficult task. they're telling us, they're keeping us up to date with the process. And to the extent that we then reach out to the public, that's on our own. That's not really what they want, expect us to do.
And how do you think tonight went for outreach and just kind of, I guess, just feeling and vibe altogether? How do you feel it went?
Well, I thought it was great. You know, we had a lot of people here, and it seemed like there was a lot of spirit, and people were very interested when we were, you know, telling them what was going on and not just in the music.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Oh, hello. I'm Len Vanderstar. I'm a habitat protection biologist here in the Valley since 1989.
Mm-hmm. So, Len, when you're speaking about the effects of industry on caribou, and not only that, but also kind of human interaction on lands that otherwise natural wildlife should be able to exist on, how do you find that you kind of strike that balance when you're at an event like this to be informative, but to still engage people as well?
Well, the key is try to keep the science down and then just reach for their heart, right? Because people are connected to the land. And it's when you're connected to the land that you become a defender of the land. So you just have to reach out to their passions and why they're here and why they have this lifestyle they have. We have existing economies here. And, you know, like, for example, here in the Northwest, it's clearly that we're a salmon nation, a salmon culture, and a salmon economy. So we already have that. So if you want to enrich that, we welcome that. If you want to destroy that, we don't welcome that. So we just have to put it out that way and just say we do have the science and the evidence now that after years of review of what's been submitted to date, the proponents have not adequately addressed our concerns. And as a result, we have a higher level of anxiety, and what they're submitting in terms of coming back to the table with the environmental assessment process is not satisfactory. We have hundreds of mountain goats up there. I think we're possibly 300 mountain goats up there. It's unbelievable. We have grizzly bears up there. They den up there. They're major residents of the Tolka Range. A wolverine's still up there, right? Yeah. So it's great. We have caribou still. We have a dynamic ecosystem that's fish and salmon dependent. So we do have that vestige of wildlife that's still left that we can still have intact, even though the landscape has been highly fragmented around the Telquas. But we do have something that's there that we can keep into perpetuity. But with the additional development that's happening, it becomes more and more questionable, right? Bulkley Valley, it's got some of we are the richest place in the world when you think about it in terms of not just the human capacity, but in terms of our fish, our forests, our wildlife, and our water.
Yep.
We got to be, if we're going to extract the resources, we got to do it sustainably.
Yeah. What are these steps that you're taking to try to organize?
Well, first of all, we want to make sure our facts are straight.
Yeah.
So we want to come out, truth prevails over the long run. So we want to make sure that we got the right experts with the right information, that we're not depending on consultants that hire their people that they submit to government for them to review, who say this is not right because we're seeing bias in the information, right? So let's hear it from another perspective. So we took a neutral position initially, keep an open mind. But when you know it's bad, then we have an ethical obligation, both as scientists and people in the know, that we have some real concerns that are not being properly addressed. So three strikes, you're out, sort of thing, right? So now it's a campaign to stop it. Okay. So, we could have all the science in the world, but it's the people that change the dial because it's a constituents. If you can move 60% of the constituents, you win the campaign. That's how we won open pen fish farms.
Yep.
That's how we killed the Enbridge bitumen pipeline. That's how we killed coal bed methane in the Bulkley Valley and the Sacred Headwaters of the Naskeen and Stikeen. That's how we killed Petronas LNG plant on Flora, Leilu Island and the banks of the Flora Banks on the mouth of Skeena. These were campaigns, and we did that with our First Nations brothers and sisters, of course, but it was the people that demanded that at that point because we brought the science forward.
Okay, thank you so much, Len.
Thank you.
My name is Tom Roper, and I'm with a group called What Matters in Our Valley, and we're trying to oppose the Telco coal mine. That's sort of our mission. Okay, so what we did is we've been trying to get information to people And this is one of our routes that we've decided upon to have a party. Mm-hmm. So, and you know how you like partying.
Are you talking to me? Are you talking to me?
Yeah. Who said that?
So, yeah. So that's sort of our idea. And then we came up with the idea of the silent auction. And all the money that we're raising mm-hmm. is really to help us get professionals. Because it's very hard when you're asked a question about, say, a containment pond
right.
or a different type of pollution or yep. something. And so we need people that know what they're talking about. We're just emotionally concerned okay. that we're, our area is going to get, you know, changed. So that's why we've done this. So tonight we're at the Legion,
yep.
and we've got ourselves together on this little party. We've got a few bands playing,
yeah,
and there's a bit of singing going on, and it feels pretty good. I gotta go.
Okay, you get at it.
Thank you, Pam.
Thank you. Yes. CSK News is funded by the Government of Canada, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and is a participating station in the Local Journalism Initiative. On behalf of my colleague Dan Messick and myself, Pam Hassan, thanks for listening.